I'd like to welcome you to the study session of Thursday, May 3rd. We need to excuse Councilmember Whalen, who is not here today, and also we need to excuse the mayor, who is out of town, along with Mr. Brady. The two of them are in Washington, D.C. on city business. We have 8 items on our study session agenda this morning, and the first one is to review the items for the agenda of the May 7th, 2007 regular council meeting. I am working from the revised 5107 city council agenda, and hopefully we're all working from the same page there. And Debbie Dollar, I think you're the go-to lady today, is that true? Excellent, thank you very much. Page 1, nothing on there. Page 2. Does anybody have anything on page 2?
Vice Mayor?
Yes.
In regards to item 3.1, which is also related to item 6.m, we do have a little additional information that may slightly modify the report. If we could have Terry Williams come up, I'd like him to explain that.
That would be great. I had my questions on 6M, but we can take them right here.
Vice Mayor, Council, good morning.
How are you this morning, Terry?
I'm doing just fine.
Excellent.
I'll be better at about 30 minutes from
Excellent.
Now.
Excellent. let me kick off on this for just a minute, if that's okay. The development impact fees, we've had some discussion back and forth on what we were going to do with the cultural impact fees. The mayor, before he left town, and I spoke, and he is in favor of keeping them the way they are right now, and I believe, Terry, that you have brought that forward. I had hoped that we would be able to negotiate something different, but it is looking like that isn't going to work, and as a result, I am supportive of keeping them as they are right now with the cultural impact fees separated.
That's correct, Vice Mayor. The proposal that you have in terms of both the ordinance change and the latest revision of the Duncan Associates study report, that revision dated of April 2007 shows the cultural impact fee as a standalone, separate impact fee as it's always been, not combined with parks. Excuse me. And the dollar amounts are not different. They've not changed, of course, but we have decided an agreement with both the mayor and the city manager's office to keep those as separate going forward to council for your review.
And on Monday, we will have a hearing, and then 6M is not on the consent agenda because of the public hearing. At that point in time, the council will give direction about which way to go.
That's correct, Vice Mayor. That's the best way that it could happen. The 6M is on for introduction. It is actually an ordinance, so it has to be introduced first. We put it on for the same night as an expedient manner. If there are public hearing comments that the council thinks are valid or of need of modifying some portion of the report or the ordinance that goes with that report, then we could delay that introduction.
Thank you. Are there council questions on this? Mr. Rawls.
My concern is the ordinance, is it one vote on the entire ordinance? Because there are parts of these development impact fees I can support the increases on, and there are parts that I can't. So it seems to me that in the past, we've probably done it separate, and I'd like to have that opportunity again.
Ms. Binner, is that a possibility?
Yes, it is. And I apologize. I don't recall how we did it in the past, whether we had it separated or not.
Vice Mayor, Council Member Rawls, in the past we had separate tables for each of the impact fees. That did provide a mechanism by which Council could vote on each separate table in and of itself. This time we have, as many other cities do, we've combined it all into one table. I believe it to be more business friendly. Because if you're building a single family house, you can look across that line in the chart and know all of the impact fees rather than having to add them up from 9 different tables. I would suggest, though, with the concurrence of the city attorney, that it may be possible, Mr. Rawls, for a motion that would accept certain portions of that part of the ordinance and then deal with those as a separate motion.
Yeah, I guess
the only problem with that is once it's introduced, it can't be changed at the adoption stage. So if council introduces it as one ordinance, then when you are considering the adoption, it is as one ordinance. We cannot pick and choose at that point because we can't modify the ordinance once introduced without going back to the introduction stage. So we will have to either devise a way to have them introduced separately or it would be one package at the time of adoption.
If that's the only all or nothing choice we have, I would prefer that we have separate ones in, because I can't support all of them.
Could we not adopt the, I mean, you're talking about a chart that's friendly to business. Why does the chart have to be part of the ordinance? Why can't the fees just be part of the ordinance? The chart adopted by reference, the chart then is constructed as a result of the approval of whatever that approval is.
We have done that on other things. We may be able to accomplish that here. I guess I'd like to go through the ordinance and see, can we work through that? But that may be an option that we can do.
Would that work for you, Mr. Rawls?
As long as I have an opportunity to vote no on the cultural impact fees, I don't care how we do it, quite frankly.
Okay.
Because I just don't think that they're, I never have believed that they're a necessary function of government, so I don't believe they're legitimate under the statute.
Other comments on this? Would the rest of the council be okay with Ms. Spinner looking at that and seeing a way that we could, okay. Debbie, it looks like if you can find a way to do that, we'd all appreciate it.
Okay, I'll look into it. My concern is what the statute says, and if it may require that they actually be adopted by ordinance, but I'll take a look at that and see if we can work
through that. Sure, the rates have to be adopted by ordinance. I would be very suspect if it says a chart has to be adopted by ordinance.
And I agree, and I think that's what we'll try and work through.
Okay, thank you.
Very good.
Okay, are there any other questions on this one? Okay, Terry.
Very good.
I'm sorry, Mr. Griswold has a question.
There was talk before, one of the methodologies we used fire and police was the number of calls for service in different industries, particularly apartments, hotels, trailers, etc. We've looked at the methodology on the apartments, and we broke some things out of hotels. Have we gone back and sort of corrected some things that might have been flawed in the data?
Vice Mayor. Councilmember Griswold, yes. In fact, one of the things that we wanted to report to you this morning is that we're expecting a minor modification to both the public safety and the fire fee table. Those two sections of the Duncan report are being revised. We have gone back and we're making corrections to 2002, 2003 police and fire calls, having found that some apartments and some assisted living centers are incorrectly labeled as multifamily when they should have been under the non-residential. We're making those corrections today. We would expect to have that information to you before the weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions on this? Okay, Terry. Thank you, Terry. Thank you for that information. All right, anything else on page two? Councilmember Griswold.
Just saw we're looking at the liquor license for Fresh and Easy Neighborhood Market. That's a new British company coming with fresh meats and produce and sort of like the old neighborhood grocery store coming. So it's quite popular in England. We'll see how well it does in Mesa. So.
Anything else on page two? All right, page three. Page four. I have a question on 5A. If you look at the backup materials on 5A, well, if I look at them, I have to get to them. I think it's just the way the staff report is written. That's my guess. The numbers add, but they don't work with each other. It says the original contract was $514,000. The current contract is $481,000, almost $482,000. We're being asked to add $33,000, which takes us to $547,000, which is only true if you go with the original contract, not the current contract. It says the requested increase is $65,000, but in the top it says it's $33,000.
I see that error now. We'll get that fixed for Monday night.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Any other questions here, Rex?
I said a question on 5B on the trucks and the cost of trucks. I may be understanding. I know it has dualies in the back, et cetera, but it's $57,000 for a truck. I'm just wondering, what kind of truck is this? The other ones we're buying for the fire department, you get about two for that cost, but they're probably.
This is a medium duty truck. This is bigger than a pickup.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have anything else on page four? Page five? Councilmember Rawls.
I'd like item 5H taken off the consent agenda, please.
I thought you would.
Thank you. Item 5G, this is the design phase of the cured-in-place wastewater lining. The amount that's being done there, is that, I looked at the map, is that like a couple of miles, Peter? And what's our experience with the cured-in-place process? Have we had a long-term experience with this?
Vice Mayor, we have done two previous projects with the cured-in-place, and it has been very successful. It significantly reduces the time of construction and the impacts on the public. And this project is about 6 miles total.
6 miles. Okay. Yes. Thank you. And this is really important. I mean, these are our wastewater lines that we're having difficulties with. We need to get them upgraded. And
yes, they're older wastewater lines that are reaching the end of their life, so this will renew those lines.
And this is getting the construction manager at risk in place?
Yes.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for your work on this. Okay, anything on page 6? Page 7. Yes, Councilmember Summers.
Jeez, Rex, your button doesn't work here. Item 6F, if I'm reading the right one, 6F has us eliminating a roadway. My question is, who owns the roadway? Is that property owned by the city of Mesa, or we just have the right-of-way there? And if we eliminate the easement, it goes back to the adjacent property owners.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, that's correct. When a right-of-way is vacated, it goes to the property owners on either side.
And that's what happens in this particular case?
Yes.
Okay. Because my concern was, if we owned the property, then we shouldn't be giving it away. We should be selling it. But if it's owned by the adjacent neighbors, then I don't have a problem. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's clarify that for a minute. The street currently is not owned by the adjacent neighbors. It's the right-of-way we're abandoning, and then we wouldn't need, then we wouldn't need the street just to the north of that. That would then be abandoned to the neighbors.
Correct.
So it isn't quite accurate to say that it's currently owned by those neighbors.
No, it's not currently owned. I just wanted to know, if we abandon the right-of-way, do we own that piece of land?
Right. Vice Mayor and Councilmember Summers, that is correct. The property was originally dedicated when the plat was filed, came from those adjacent properties. And so when you go through the process of vacating that right-of-way, it goes back to those properties on either side.
Okay. So it wouldn't be City of Mesa property.
Right. Mr. Rawls.
This comes, 6F, still on 6F, this comes to us with a denial. And so it seems to me that the council ought to have the opportunity at the meeting on the 21st to consider whether or not it wants to approve this project. So I believe we need to have an ordinance introduced that is a positive ordinance as well. Is that in here?
Yes, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, yes, we have crafted an ordinance. It is in the packet for introduction. That's why it's on the agenda today. And we have reviewed that draft ordinance with the applicant, and they're satisfied with it.
Well, when we did this last time, which I think was on Lowe's, we had to have two items on
correct.
The agenda.
And one. So from that we learned. We're
okay, so we've combined them into one, so we can still vote affirmatively on
the 21st.
On the 21st without having two items introduced. Okay.
Thank you. Another item on this one, when I had met with you and with the applicant on this, we had discussed the 5 feet versus 7 feet. John, have you gone back to your staff, and are we okay on that?
Yes, Vice Mayor, we have. We're leaving it at the 5 feet. That 2 foot of landscape will serve better in the middle of the project.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Councilmember Griswold, did you have a question on this one? Okay. Anything else on this page? All right. So we're leaving 6F on for introduction. Page 8. Councilmember Summers.
Yep, me again. On item 6J, there are going to be some concerns in the neighborhood. When you look at the site plan, I don't know if the entire council's had the opportunity. There is a site for a hotel, mid-rise hotel, pretty darn close to neighborhood. This is an area about the 202 in Elliott. There are some power lines just south of that. They want to put or at least the site calls for the concept of a hotel there to the north of residential neighborhood. I think that's a bad idea to put that type of a use that close to the residential neighborhood. Well, I guess I'll pose this as a question for you, John. What they're looking at a conceptual C2. What does a conceptual C2 do for the city? I don't like this site plan. I don't want to zone them so that they can bring this forward and we could have a potential 207 claim. So does a conceptual C2 allow them to go out and see what kind of development they can do, but allow us some leeway, making sure that the site plan is going to fit with the neighborhood to the north?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, this is a rather interesting and unique case, the way we're bringing it through the process. The applicant for this property has a concept for what's being called a super regional mall and employment center. The current general plan designations have regional commercial on the south portion and mixed-use employment on the north portion of the property. Rather than follow that kind of strict designation of those land uses, they're trying to mix them a little bit more and develop a more creative center that can mix those uses and provide for, we think, a more sustainable and better development. So we're trying to work with him on that. Part of the project includes a development agreement that staff is also working on and should be on your May 21st agenda for approval, along with the zoning that will help address some of the concerns that you've raised in terms of they are doing a DMP, Developed Master Plan Overlay, which allows them for that conceptual C2 zoning on the northern portion where there's supposed to be the mixed-use employment. We're not wanting to give away the C2 right up front and have it just turn into a retail center and not get the mix of uses that we would like to see on the property. That's why they're going to conceptual zoning on that northern portion. We're not really approving a site plan per se with the DMP, but more of a conceptual land use arrangement, which does indicate the hotel on the north side of the property. Staff did have some concerns with that we discussed with the Planning and Zoning Board. The applicant's been very adamant. They think that's the only place on the site for the hotel. PNZ has recommended approval with the DMP showing the hotel in that location. There was concern by the neighborhood, so I'm sure it's something the council will want to look at closely also. So up front, they don't get the C2 zoning specifically. They'll have to come back subsequently with an actual site plan and rezoning of that northern portion to get the hard C2 zoning. So there'll be another chance to look at that. The development agreement also, the main reason for the development agreement is to give us a mechanism to go back and undo the DMP and the C2 if this super regional mall that's being proposed with the upscale stores and such doesn't really come about. That way we can go back to the current plan to have the employment area instead of the commercial area.
Is this fairly consistent with the general plan?
The overall project is, yes. It's mixed a little bit, doesn't follow that hard line of the plan itself, but keeps the overall mix of uses as envisioned by the plan.
Okay. The neighbors are probably going to want to speak on this, so on their behalf, I'm going to pull this item from the consent.
This is introduction, right. Isn't it?
Yeah, right. Vice Mayor, this is introduction at this time. The real time to speak would be in 2 weeks when the actual hearing occurs.
Right, in that case,
would you like to leave it on for
now? No, we'll leave it for now, and let's make sure that in 2 weeks that one is off, not on consent. We'll put it that way.
Okay.
That'll work.
Councilmember Griswold.
Yeah, I'm a little unclear of this. If we approve this in 2 weeks, are we giving them the right to build the hotel in this location?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, no, not at this time. It would just be conceptual C2 on the north. They'll have to come back and hard zone and do a site plan to really have that full right to develop. Their concept plan, though, does show the hotel. And so if there is concern about that, it would be a good time to go ahead and tell them you're going to need to make a change to that arrangement in order to get approval in the future.
So if it was passed currently with showing that in that location, future councils, are they bound by that at all, or just says this is a conceptual, you don't have the right to do it, we were just sort of thinking of putting this here, but it may be another spot in our development?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, you're not giving them firm approval of it at this time. There would be some flexibility, but it sure signals the intent that it's probably okay because you have approved that concept that shows it there. So unless there's something said about that being an issue, that they're going to need to rearrange it, the developer would be under the impression that that should be okay.
Can we pass it the way it stands with a note from us that we're very concerned about the location of the hotel?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, I think you could include that as just part of the discussion and the motion, that when they come back, they'll need to find an alternate location for that hotel. I don't think you have to, because it's such a general concept plan at this point, I don't think you have to have them come back with a revised plan at this time.
I don't want to hold them hostage, but I don't want to just tie another in the hands of another council saying, yeah, you have to build this here, even though it doesn't make sense to the neighbors. So, all right, thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Quick follow-up. What's the height restrictions right now? Are there any? How many stories could they go under current ordinance without
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, with a straight C2 zone. It's a two-story height limit, and so they're going to have to get a BIZ overlay also in order to go the extra height.
And that we could deny?
That's right.
So there are multiple layers. Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other questions on page 8? All right. Page 9. We already discussed 6M. Anything else there? Page 10. Councilmember Griswold.
On page 9, 7A, is there a map of the this area where it's exactly located? Am I missing it in my packet or? You can get back to me later. I don't need it right now,
okay.
But I was just
wondering. Will somebody take that?
Yes.
Jack, you'll take care of that?
Thank you.
Thank you. Page 10. Page 11. Page 12 on 8A and 8B. These are the cases that have to do with water and wastewater in the county. Can somebody give us an update on where we are after council direction last week? What does it mean to these two, and why has 8B been deleted?
Vice Mayor, 8B has been deleted because he's not under any kind of time constraints, so he is going to go ahead and annex, pull his permits in the city, and he is entitled to water at that time. 8A has not withdrawn because they want to pursue the utility agreement as an interim measure until such time their annexation is completed.
And is there a way, Ms. Spinner, of our discussing this on Monday night in a way that they sign an agreement? I recognize that, you know, we may not have total enforcement, but there are some timelines along the way that, you know, before a water meter is pulled, it's down the road a little bit. Can we make sure that he has pulled his papers for annexation, that he is in the process of annexation, that we're moving forward with that at the same time?
Vice Mayor, what we are working towards, based on the direction a couple weeks ago from council, is moving forward with approving, providing him water, even though he is not annexed into the city. But if council feels that he has made a good faith effort based on the council's change in his policies with regard to annexation, our understanding was council is willing to go ahead and approve the water prior to the annexation based on his entering into a utility service agreement. Contained in the utility service agreement will be the clauses that were discussed 2 weeks ago with the council, as well as a provision that he is going to go forward with annexation. And I don't know the exact wording, but we are going to try and include language if he fails to annex by whatever date, the water service may be terminated. As we discussed, that's what we're unclear on in terms of the enforceability. However, he is acknowledging that he is going to annex. He's made an avowal to the council, and we're asking him to confirm that avowal in the contract.
And I understand all of those things, but at this point, what is prohibiting him from pulling the papers in order to start the annexation process?
Nothing.
He has made his request. And
okay.
It is.
He has made the request.
Yes.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Any other questions on this? Councilmember Griswold.
Yeah, I'd support a parallel process if we can, but I would like to make sure that it's not just all based on trust, that there's some kind of trigger involved. But right now, to have him be able to go ahead is a great project. We need it in this area. And him to start getting his permits, et cetera. He won't be ready for water for a long time. I would like that process to be able to go ahead and not hold him hostage on that. So thank you.
Thank you. On page 13, it's my understanding on 9C that a legal protest was filed, but it was not filed in a timely manner. So I'm looking at you, John, and you, Debbie. This is a new one. I don't remember having a legal protest that wasn't filed in time before. So what's the process here?
Vice Mayor, council members, the ordinance establishes the process in 1118.8 for the legal protest procedures, and clearly state that those petitions have to be in the Planning Division office by noon on Monday prior to the Monday of the council action. And so for this particular item that you're going to hear next week. It had to be in our office this last Monday at noon. We did not receive it until Tuesday about 10 a.m. Therefore, it did not meet the ordinance requirements for timely filing in order to be considered for legal protest and requiring the three-quarter vote by the council. We have evaluated it. It does have enough signatures along a portion of the south side that if it had been filed in a timely manner, it would be a legal protest and would cause that vote. But again, because it didn't meet the ordinance requirements for filing, it's not a legal protest.
Okay. Debbie?
I would agree with John's interpretation. That's what the Mesa ordinance states.
And someone is going to let them know that their legal protest is moot. Okay, thank you. Councilmember Griswold.
Just a point of order. If we get a protest on a border issue, we're right on Gilbert, do they have the right to file a legal protest? If you're not in the city, do we still take legal protests?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, yes. The ordinance just says anybody within that distance requirement does not distinguish whether they're
so if you're in
the city
Gilbert,
or the county.
Counter Island, Apache Junction, whatever, you can hold up a project in Mesa.
That you can file the protest and then the council may evaluate it, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Jones.
Back on page 12, 8A, just being consistent, although very remote, I will go ahead and declare a conflict. I probably don't, but play it safe because I've done it this far.
Thank you. Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you. Back on 9C, I think even though the legal protest isn't valid, I think when we tell those people that their protest isn't valid, we still need to tell them that they have the right to come and express their views, and their views will still be considered by the council. It just doesn't trigger the formal three-quarters vote, because we don't want to say, well, you're too late, so you don't even bother showing up. We won't hear you anymore. That's not the intent.
Correct.
Thank you, Councilmember Rawls. That's a good point. On page 14, is there anything there? I just had a question on 10B. I thought we had approved this subdivision plat before, and I saw that it hasn't changed, so I'm not sure.
You like the process so much, you wanted to do it again.
and maybe what we did was we approved the zoning and they showed the plat, and so I'm just remembering it from then, but it just felt like we had done it. I looked at it and I thought, gee, I thought I'd already done this one. You know what, John? Don't take the time now.
That would be the case.
Is that what it was? We saw the zoning, but the plat was not approved. Okay. Thank you. Anything else on the agenda that we missed? Anybody miss anything they want to go back to? All right. Then we'll move back to the pink agenda and we'll hear a presentation and discuss budget revenue projections. Chuck Odom, how are you this morning?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Are we fantastic? Do you have good news for us, Chuck?
Revenues are always good. It's the expenditure side that's not always pleasant.
Oh, that is so not true.
Well, good morning, Vice Mayor, Council. This is going to start beginning our formal process of hearing the budget and the budget proposal coming forward from the city manager. Since the mayor and city manager were out of town today, thought it best to save the full budget and all the explanation of the new book and so forth. It's got quite a lot of changes in the format, so we'll do a presentation on the expenditure side and the format changes next week at Thursday morning. So this morning we thought we'd go over what is driving us on the revenue side to balance the budget. So I have a very short PowerPoint, Councilman Summers, so just 11 pages. If you turn to page 2, what we're going to do is go through some of the major graphical areas. I'll go through the general fund sales tax, state shared revenues, building permit areas, go over some of the significant changes in individual revenue categories, look at the net income for the major utility programs, and then we have a summary of the total net revenues. So on page 2 or slide 2, general fund sales tax is our 1.2% sales tax rate. As you can see in 06-07, above that line, we have the implementation of the new layer of 0.2% sales tax. We had budgeted $105.9 million. We're projecting about $105.7 million coming in this year, so pretty close to targets. For 07-08, we're projecting a 5.2% increase. Now, if you do the math on the 113.5 and 6, that's a little higher rate, but when we implement, there is a delay from implementation to collection, so that additional layer there is just the additional layer of monthly collection from July and part of August that you would be reflecting there. And then I've included what we had in our fall forecast for the long-term sales tax percentage rates, and those are the percentage changes between fiscal year. They are not the sales tax rates. I want to point that out. Anybody have any question on our sales tax?
Nope.
The next slide, page 3, is our state shared revenues, which are distributed based on a per capita population rate. There's varied methodologies between these three, but they're all population accounts. We can see that we're still holding with what we'd projected. We haven't seen any slide in those numbers. We've seen a steady increase in their state sales tax. That continues to perform well. Had a slight decline in what we've seen on auto lieu, probably dealing with the slackening of car sales. Not a lot of change, it's nice having a steady economy in this area. Building permits. This is the one area where we've seen a significant slide in revenues. Probably no surprise to anyone. The housing market cutting back. What you see for the continued growth is not that we projected a lot of volume growth, but it's the indexing that we've got on the value related to the project. Since the permits are driven by the project value, you're seeing no volume growth at this time, just value growth. Now, some significant summary revenue changes. License and permits. And what I've also done is include an attachment to this that kind of gives you an overall of all the major areas that we are looking at and significant changes. I've just taken some of the ones that don't normally get highlighted too much, but do have significant impact to us on the varying amounts of revenues between fiscal years. First one, we've got licenses and permits. As you can see, I've included in the first column, the 0607 budgeted, the 0607 estimated, and then I've got the budgeted revenues for 078 and the differences between that. Now, all the differences that we've been measuring is I'm not measuring the differences from 0708 to 0607 off of the budgeted, but off our estimated, because the way we set our forecast, each time we've built our whole forecast based on percentage changes. So we reset our base every time we've got better numbers. So we take it out into the future so that we can adequately model what's happening to our financial picture.
Chuck, if you look at the Section 8 housing vouchers, this is a federal pass-through program. The difference between the budgeted and the actuals in 0607, is that a timing issue?
Well, what it was, we were implementing a new software package, so we quit taking the vouchers because we couldn't adequately track them in this new software. We've got that fully implemented. And now that you're seeing the increase is back, but it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. Our housing rental stock, we're getting inflow from other areas because our rentals are somewhat cheaper. So we accept these portable vouchers and we get the rental payments from the other agencies coming into Mesa. So we had quit taking the portable vouchers from July through January of this last year.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Rawls.
Chuck, I'm a little concerned about the projected increase in the 0708 budgeted revenues for the building permit fees. I understand what you're saying, but are we anticipating the economy picking back up?
Well, there's two components in that, Councilmember Rawls. We've got the rate increases built in.
Right.
And then the value increase. There is no volume growth. I haven't included any volume growth in these.
Okay, so we're almost coming back up to what we budgeted for this current fiscal year.
Well, in essence, what we've done, I see what you're saying, yes. But in essence, what we've done is we've seen some uptick in the last couple months on pulling of permits.
Okay.
So I don't think we're going to slide anymore in that area from where we are. So I'm comfortable resetting the base and growing from there.
Resetting the base at the estimated 8.9 million?
Yes, sir.
I mean, because you're talking about $1.8 million increase on an 8.9, I'm guessing that's a 20% increase.
If I recall correctly, and I don't have that right in front of me, but I believe there was around $600,000 in rate increases in this area.
Okay, that just jumps out at me when you have a downturn like we did, and then to jump it, not only marginally, but back up
I would guess a 20% increase.
I can get you the exact rate increase impact and the indexing.
Okay, I'd just like to see it, because that one, I just don't want us to overestimate revenues and then have to deal with the consequences of that down the line.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, if I could also remind you that that's still a reserve fund, and we review it monthly, and our commitment is to keep our expenses within those revenues, whether they go up, well, when they go down,
right.
Sure.
And this is also a restricted fund to a certain extent, is it not? I mean, you can't use it for other things, so I understand the danger is less that we'll become dependent on it in another area, but I just, one of the things that I experienced at the county when I got there was grossly inflated revenue projections in order to make the budget balance, and it caused great heartburn.
In fact, to their commitment on that, I believe they're holding six positions vacant for the next year to balance. Okay. So they're being responsible.
And that's terrific, and I'm not trying to suggest in any way that you're doing the same kind of thing here. I just, it's a number that jumps back up a lot after a one-year downturn. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make sure that you were aware, that I was aware, that we need to be careful in that area.
If I could just jump in there real quickly, we are assuming, as far as our expenditures for next year, up flat. We're not anticipating any growth at all. We will continue to hold positions vacant, even though we have the need there, and not make any expenditures until we actually see what the fiscal.
Unless the revenue does present itself, and then you go and fill the gaps.
Absolutely.
Okay, terrific.
Councilmember Griswold.
As long as Christine's still up there, we're basing this also on, we've approved some large projects recently. They're going to be in the pipeline this coming year. So they're not as many projects, but some large ones that pay a larger share. Is that the basis of these estimates?
Again, our estimates from a building safety standpoint is flat. What we're trying to get to is a better predictive job of looking at what's coming through planning to see in the future
right.
years what we can expect from a building safety perspective at this point. We are not doing that. We're anticipating flat.
Okay. But we know of some large projects
yeah,
coming
absolutely.
Through with some expenditures
right.
that are already going to be banked.
Yes, and that was the effect we saw last year. We had a couple big projects that came through. We had a spike. But again, we're not even looking at that as a predictor of what we're doing for next year. We're really keeping out those spikes, trying to maintain a pretty conservative fiscal approach.
Well, we are seeing the mix change in the commercial versus residential, so that is being taken into account in these forecasts.
Yeah, residential definitely is still down, but we're seeing an increase in commercial.
But large commercial projects are up, so
exactly.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rawls.
Just another line here that jumps off the page at me is the CDBG dollars.
Yes.
I know there's going to be an explanation, you always have one, but you know, all we hear is that Congress is going to continually cut this program, and most is rollover money, or what is it?
This is all rollover money. They've been declining on what they're allocating. These are unspent allocations that we've got that we've budgeted for 07-08.
Okay, so we have the money.
We have the money.
Haven't spent it.
Haven't spent it.
So we have to budget it next year as an expenditure. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Just, I knew that was going to be the explanation, but.
But it's a good question.
Yes.
And we have already approved projects for the most part to spend that money.
Yes,
in
we have.
In previous years, it just didn't get spent in those years.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions on this significant revenue change page? Or can we let them go on? Okay, next page, Chuck.
Charges for services. Probably the biggest variance in this is implementation of the fees from partial years in 06-07 to full year reflection in 07-08. So that's where you're seeing the biggest fluctuation. Fire inspection being one of those, and the environmental compliance fee. The other large area here for charges for services is our concession revenues related to HOHOCOM, and that's because of a change in the contract and methodology of accounting for it. It doesn't represent a new net income, but it's the way we're accounting for the new concession expenditures related to that contract.
Chuck, let me talk to you about that for a minute, because one of the issues that happens is, and this is going to come up again this year, in our budget, we have areas where, and let me take this as an example, where you have the budgeted expense, you have the budgeted income, so it drives our budget up, our numbers in terms of what we're expending, and yet it's a it's not revenue. It's not, what's the right way of saying this? It makes it look like we had money we never had.
That is correct. And that's driven by state law because of the expenditure limitation. So if you have the likelihood of expenditure, you need to set your budget to that likelihood. May not mean that you're going to spend it. And in these kinds of areas, we monitor that against what the revenues are, and we adjust the expenditures accordingly. But it does drive the expenditures higher than maybe what the likelihood would be. But we have to have the capacity under state law.
So if the vendor's cost for purchasing ground beef goes up, it drives our budget number up.
If we're paying for that ground beef, yes.
Yeah. And then the other issue that isn't quite captured in here, but it's part of this whole thing, is the internal expenditures that occur from one department to another that the state auditors required us to show as expenditure in one department, income in another department, and then expenditure again. So you spent the same dollars twice, and it made our budget go up by how much last year?
Well, it'll be the same again for the next 2 years, just over $20 million.
Yeah, a lot of money.
The internal credit service revenue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So if anybody has any question on charges for services, fines and forfeitures, this is due to case volume. It will come up in 06-07 till the case is adjudicated or spent out. And then we're looking at 07-08 being more of the plateau, so we're dropping back down to what we'd say normal volume. So we're seeing a surge in cases, we'll plateau out and return to normal volume. If you go to page 7, for those of you that have been on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and the Audit and Finance Committee, you've already seen the presentations on the utilities. These net incomes were driven by those models that were presented at those councils. And this is just presenting the net incomes for each of the major utilities. Just some quick points. Electric utility, the reason for the spike in net income, as we've talked about, is the lack of personnel that we've been having in the electric utility to continue to maintain. Not a real healthy profitability issue. We'll continue to do that. For 07-08, it goes down in 08-09 is because of the decisions being made on the electric utility. Things that we were going to bond on maintenance items, we're paying cash for out of the electric utility. So that puts the net income down to a lower level. Do we have any questions on any of that?
There will be a discussion on all of this when this comes to the council for, because I do have comments, but I'm not going to make them today.
We'll have a full discussion with the presentation of those models when we do the utility rate presentations.
Okay, thank you.
Gas utility, same kind of issues, just being driven by fluctuations in consumption. I'm sorry, page 8. Water and wastewater, probably the more interesting of these groups. As you can see out into the future periods, because of additions to the system, major additions to the systems, the wastewater, we can kind of view the water and wastewater as a combined utility that hand in hand. But out in starting 10-11 through 12-13, as you can see, based on the current proposed rates, we do have some net income issues related to the wastewater utility. So again, a long-term issue that we're going to try to address through the forecast as we address it this next fall. Solid waste, the slight dip that you see in there is addressing a lot of their capital needs. They've been doing without trucks for so long. We're seeing a dip in net income. We get back up more to the plateau and continue out into the future. So in summary, on page 11, we've come within about $537,000 of what we had originally projected for 06-07 revenues. Again, I think very fortunate to be here during a steady economy and a lot of work with the staff forecasting the revenues. But for 07-08, we're going to see an increase or projecting an increase of about $77 million with those major changes that we've talked about, a lot of one-times, a lot of grant-related things that don't give us any budget capacity, but do go up because we've got capital expenditures and so forth that are related to these. So,
Chuck, on the one-time things, and I should probably actually be looking at Debbie Dollar on this one. On those one-time things, I know on Monday night we have a sale of some city land, some one-time money. I think all of us, I don't want to speak for everybody, so if somebody else wants to jump in and disagree with me, feel free. But I feel like we've given some direction on one-time dollars being used for one-time expenses. And I think, you know, we'd like to have a sense of what's happening with that. If we could sort of separate that out a little bit at some point and have a discussion on those one-time dollars and where they're going, that would be meaningful to me. Is that any disagreement here on that? Councilmember Griswold?
I think part of our model also we used is $10 million of land sales to balance the budget every year for the next 10 years. And so whether it's a small piece or down in the water farm down in Canal, but as long as we're selling the $10 million, that's just their basic budget part. And then above that, I'd like to see a report of what we sold more than that.
Well, but even that sale, my recollection was that we were using it for retirement of debt. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was not to balance the budget to hire somebody to work in the library. At least that's my.
That was paid for the debt service.
Did you look over here at Jack's face? We've got a library convert over here. Put the man in charge of the library, and we've taught him to read, and it's just been remarkable. Councilmember Rawls.
It's too bad you and Ms. Spinner won't allow there to be any books in the library because you keep them at home.
under her kids' beds, we discovered.
We need the fees.
Believe me, Debbie and I are keeping the library going.
$1 a day.
Vice Mayor, you're correct. That has been the direction in the past, and we can work to define that better for you in terms of how those monies are being spent.
I just think it would be good, considering the fact that, you know, we have paid such close attention to this, and I don't want to let it slip away.
Absolutely.
All right.
And to that point, on the attachment that I provided, a lot of those major categories and some of the significant changes that are in there are in italics. And you can see that under water revenues, you can see originally we'd forecasted $10 million in Pinal County water sales for this year. When we went through the forecast, we made a conscious decision at that time we were not going to do that. In 07-08, we've got $6 million. In land sales in there. So that is our target. To say that it's all Pinal County water farm, that's not the way we're looking at it. We're looking at all land sales as meeting this potential target.
Sure. Councilmember Griswold.
I just have never seen a company or an organization that could get their projections on their revenues as close as you did this year. You're either very good or you're very lucky, one or the other, or both. But that's an outstanding job.
It's, what is it, better to be lucky than good?
And Madam Zola, you pay her off too.
Okay. And a good staff.
Great staff.
Very much so.
Councilmember Jones.
Okay, Chuck, so as we move forward and do the full budget presentation and we're looking at numbers, and as Vice Mayor mentioned, we have a lot of things, pass-through dollars, when you have the increase in the cost of natural gas that we pass through to customers. We have all these monies come in, and it makes it look like our budget is just skyrocketing, and it isn't.
Right.
And how do we make that presentation so that people really understand that? Because all they see is, here's the dollars of what we took in.
Well, that's our attempt next week, is to try to take you from the discretionary dollars, as Mr. Brady likes to show you the general operating. We're going to start with the very basic of what our discretionary dollars are.
Because that is our real budget.
That is correct. And then we'll have explanatory and try to build block by block out to what the total number is. That's what our attempt will be.
And hopefully that message gets out to the public.
And the other thing that we have been doing over the course of the last couple of years that I'm not sure is well understood is that this council looked out and said, we're going to have a huge problem. And so we started setting money aside. The cuts were frequently to set money aside so that when we hit this problem in this upcoming budget year, that we would have the money set aside for the bond payments. So that's another piece of that explanation that's going to have to be made, because people are going to see now the money that was set aside for the last several years with the cuts that we made now put into the budget in order to pay that bonded indebtedness.
There's two parts of that. There's first that bonded side, and then secondarily we've got fund balance targets for our rainy day to make sure.
Right.
And because we appropriate that also looks like we've got larger, but it's just for emergencies. It's making sure that we're covered in an emergency.
Thank you. Councilmember Griswold.
I think Councilmember Jones makes an excellent point that every year we're going to sell more water as we grow, more utilities. The budget is going to grow every year. It looks like it's growing budget. Well, it's a growing community. As you sell more water, your budget goes up. And it's hard to explain to people, no, we're not just spending more money. We're taking in more, but it's almost a wash. It costs as much to produce the water as it does to take it in, but it makes your budget grow every year. And people say, well, why aren't you holding it static? I thought you were cutting back. And that's hard to explain. So I think whatever you can do to get that point across to people, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Are there other comments on this? Did you have any other comments for us, Chuck, on your attachments here?
Well, probably the biggest comment is we're going to be distributing a book that is going to be radically different than in the past. We are now coming forward with activity-based budgeting. You'll be seeing by service. It'll look different. We'll reconcile between the two to try to explain, but we've had massive reorganization in the city. So we'll be going forward with the service, and we'll have a presentation on format and how to use the book also next week.
Is it going to be C-Spot run? Is it going to be at that level?
It's going to have lots of numbers. Mr. Rawls will be very happy.
Lots of pictures? All right. Thank you for your presentation. We really appreciate it. Were there any other council questions or comments on this particular item? All right, seeing none, then we'll move back to item number 3, which is hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on irrigation water delivery districts within city boundaries, including Summer Mesa, as recommended by the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. And Catherine, I really appreciate your, I'm gonna just turn this over for 1 second to Council Member Rawls to say something that he said off the microphone, on the microphone.
I asked Ms. Dollar to conduct an investigation as to who wrote this council report, because in my 3 years here, this is the best written, most lucid, clearest. It's a fabulous product that allowed us to understand a very complex subject, and it allowed us to make rational decisions. It wasn't biased. It was level. It was as good as it gets, and I just wanted to commend whoever wrote it.
Wow, thanks. no pressure there, right? Bill and myself wrote that. And Bill especially wrote the part about a lot of the legal issues. He did an excellent job. So.
Catherine did most of the work. Yeah.
Well, it was well done. I heard comments from everyone about how well done it was. Mr. Granger commented on it as well. I want to give Mr. Granger an opportunity. I think you wanted to, did you want to talk about the broad issues first? What I'd like to do is, Mr. Granger, if you just want to come up and have a seat in that chair, either one of those chairs, and then when we get to the specifics on yours, then you'll be right there and we can ask questions. So Mr. Granger commented on how good the report
was. Oh, good,
was
I'm
as
glad.
Well,
so. Thank you. Most of you, council members, Vice Mayor, most of you have seen this report. In fact, I think all of you except for Tom Rawls. So if the rest of you want to kind of go into your happy place or whatever you want to do, we'll
Mr. Rawls doesn't have a happy place. Council Member Rawls.
I was just going to say I'm always in my happy place. I just hide it well. But actually, the extent of the presentation can be substantially limited for my benefit because of the lucidity of the written material.
I'll breeze right through it. Okay. As you guys know, there are certain lands within SRP and RWCD that can receive water on their own terms, according to their own rights, and not through the city system. We call it landscape irrigation. A lot of us receive landscape irrigation. And as you also know, methods of paying for the infrastructure that's needed to maintain those systems range everywhere from no one pays and it all falls apart to people go around neighbor to neighbor and try to collect some to HOAs where there's a formal assessment. Irrigation water delivery districts are formed when neighbors come together and basically want to provide for the payment of these systems. They are special taxing districts, and they are bodies corporate, which I think one of the main points there is that they can exercise the power of eminent domain. The county has to approve formation, but within city boundaries, before the county can move forward with the petitions, city approval via resolution is necessary. And Scott Granger here with Summer Mesa sent us a letter asking for endorsement of formation. it's been a while, back in September.
Yes. I think.
Yeah, you've been very patient. These districts are governed by a board of three landowners. They levy acreage assessments through a simple vote of the board. Those acreage assessments do have to be reported yearly to the county in an annual report. And this affords the board the means to tax other landowners within the district rather than rely on informal means of collection and or property liens, which is sometimes what HOAs resort to. The county adds the assessment onto the property tax bill. So instead of receiving a statement from an HOA or something else, it actually is done through the county, administered through the county, and it you probably wouldn't even see it. It'd just be on your property tax. These districts can also charge water delivery fees. There's no regulation of those fees. It's just whatever the board decides, and those fees are not reported to the county. In general terms, as we've talked about before, HOAs are capable of assessing lands and maintaining irrigation services. So where an HOA exists, the need for broader powers, including eminent domain, is somewhat unclear. There are three districts within Mesa City boundaries. And the city, interestingly enough, never approved formation of these boundaries. It appears as though back in the days, the county did not realize that city approval was necessary before moving forward with petitions. And so the county moved forward with all of these petitions across the valley. And our ability to challenge the validity of these districts has now expired. Actually, if I can just go back for a second, this Groves of Hermosa Vistas, where many, many, many city employees live, including Ms. Dollar and Brian Raines and others. It's kind of funny. It's been like a soap opera. But I got yelled at by the county over this one. But anyway, the city does own land within the Groves of Hermosa Vista. It's retention basins number 332 and number 333. And we currently pay the assessments under protest. I guess the city and Ms. Spinner can maybe elaborate, but we feel like, of course, we're a government agency, so we shouldn't be taxed by another government agency, but the county disagrees, and we've had to pay those assessments under protest. Otherwise, I guess the county was threatening to sell the land off or something. I'm not really sure. So in terms of implications of formation, there is really no effect on water rights. These people are allowed to receive this water under their own water rights. It has no effect on our water rights. The property owned or used by one of these districts is exempt from taxation when used for district purposes, and IWDDs can use public roads for right-of-ways. It is important to note that if there is ever a dispute between one of these districts and the city about right-of-ways, that those disputes are resolved at the Corporation Commission, which is not something that the city currently has to do. It. And so it does take away some of our authority over, potentially, some of our authority over our own roads. And as we've mentioned quite thoroughly in the report, these districts have the power of eminent domain. As far as costs go, there's no inherent cost in approving the formation of one of these. If we were ever to impose a primary or secondary property tax, there's a potential that some land out there might be exempt. Like I said, the property we own is subject to assessments. There may be some indirect costs related to disputes if we ever have disputes with these districts, but we don't think those disputes are likely. So in a nutshell, there's your presentation. If you have any questions, Bill and I will try to answer them.
Thank you. In my conversation yesterday with Mr. Granger, if I understood the conversation correctly, I'm not sure the county understood what their laws were. It sounds like when Mr. Granger approached the county, he told them what he had read in the statute, and they were surprised to discover that they needed approval from cities. So the county ought to think about hiring Mr. Granger, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Granger, would you like to share anything, or do you want to just take questions from us?
Well, a few things, yes. Number one, I'm not the only representative of our Summer Mesa Homeowners Association. There's a number of us in the audience today.
You want to raise your hands if you're with Summer Mesa here? Wow.
So we have a bunch. So anyway, I am the, by default, because I suggested this route, that we go forward this, I'm kind of the chairman of the Irrigation Water Delivery District activities for us. So I'll take questions. I think all of my comments were pretty well covered in the report. Well, I would say a few things. In the alternatives, in the back end of the report, And I would say again, I appreciate the work that was done in the report. There is really nothing in the report I disagree with, and I think it's well said. In the alternatives that the report presents to the council, there's two of them that simply don't apply to us. Our district, our proposed district, does not include any city property, so we're not going to send you a bill. And the other one is we are a homeowners association, so one of the items in here is only in cases where no homeowner association exists that one of these kind of districts could be generated or created. I've been involved in two irrigation districts, ours and one where I had my office building previously. And in that case, there was no association at all. There was no homeowners association. And we experienced all the difficulties that Catherine has talked about. There were breaks in the system, there was no mechanism to collect money in order to make the repairs, and it just deteriorated. We have a mechanism as a homeowners association through collection of fees. However, we have a very limited ability to enforce that. It's through liens, as Catherine said, but you really can only lien a place and be effective until somebody sells it. And we have a handful of members that have been there for many, many years that simply don't pay. The number, and I've got a list. There are 19 out of the 74 that haven't paid, but of that group, there's only about four or five where the monies are significant over the period of years. Significant meaning a total of about $4,000. But that's a year's budget for us.
And my understanding, let me just frame the parameters of the discussion this morning.
Yes.
First of all, the staff is looking for general direction on what to do with the IWDD issue.
Exactly.
So that's the direction that's going to be given this morning. Additionally, we need direction if we are going to act on the request from Summer Mesa. That needs to be done on Monday night and added to the agenda for Monday night. So that will be additional direction from this group. So having said that, let's start some discussion and take some questions here. Councilmember Griswold.
I wish you lived in my district because I could really use you in a couple of areas. I've dealt with flooding issues on Mesa Vista and Val Vista for 4 years. Elementary school kids going with knee-deep in water every 2 weeks to try to get the bus, the road getting ruined, and people not taking their water and letting it dump and broken pipes, et cetera, for people that don't understand how to take irrigation water. So these are problems that affect our residents, they affect our streets, and I'm looking for a solution mechanism. And I think you've come up with one, because some of these areas don't have HOAs. They need some mechanism to fix their water. The good neighbor that fixes the pipes every month gets tired of paying for it and trying to collect from his friends who don't pay him after a while. So I think this makes sense. It solves some problems in our city. I think done right and with a good group, it's a good mechanism. Now, how you refine it and make it a workable one and how do you keep it from being a overbearing one, I think we can have discussion. But I'm in favor of the concept, done right, and we're about ready to turn off water. Our WCD gave us permission. We're going to turn off all the water to a whole area this week. It's been 4 years of flooding, and they cannot teach their members how to take water. What do you do with your members if they just let an hour's worth of water run onto the streets and they don't want to get up to take their water?
Well, so far, our solution to that has been the very few individuals that run out and take care of it for the association, and they're getting tired, just like your organization. That's been our response. And what this will do for us and would do for any other group that chose to do this is allow you to hire someone to take care of it. That's really the bottom line. We, as the system gets older, it requires more maintenance, and maintenance costs money or costs time on the part of the members. And when you've got people that simply aren't paying, but they use the water anyway, it seems very unfair, and this was our solution. I think it'll work. I'm certainly not, as a staunch libertarian, I'm not in favor of taxes, but sometimes they can serve a purpose, and that's basically where we are here. This is our small group, and we've decided as the majority members, and we've had three large meeting, we've had 30 to 40 members at least at the meetings where we've had ballots on this issue, and they've all been, two were 100%, and I believe the third one was almost that. Chuck, was that right? Yes. Chuck Brown, our president.
So basically your solution through the organization, you'd hire a Zanharo or someone to manage your water for you, open them at 3 in the morning and stand there in hip boots and do all those wonderful things for you?
No, I don't think we're thinking of going that far. But if someone doesn't manage their water, we could do it for them and turn it off and weld the valve shut if we chose to.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Griswold, if you'd look at page 6, staff has some alternatives that are policy guidance things. That one is approving all IWDD formations on any requests that come before the council, approve on a case-by-case basis, approve the formation only in cases where no HOA exists, approve only in cases where no city property is included, or take no action on any IWDD formations and thereby deny future formations. Did you have a preference?
Yeah, I had circled approve IWDD formation requests on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
In some cases, it makes perfect sense. If you have a good management group that's willing to do it, we have only 49 or 51% and you have 49% against it, I don't think it's going to work really well, but you're going to have open revolution.
You're right.
So I think when you have a majority of people that care, the problem is the ones that come to meetings are usually the people that behave themselves and do a good job. And the 10% you have a problem with are not the ones that come and get educated or even care. And then the water all ends up in our streets when it's not done right, in my circumstances.
We've noticed that.
Councilmember Ross.
I guess the problem I'm having with this, Scott, is if you want to hire somebody, why can't you assess your homeowners, increase your fees in your homeowners association? Why do you need the power of governmental taxation?
Well, we have increased the fees, but that doesn't make people pay.
I understand that.
That's the bottom line problem is we have 19, although of the 19, there's only about 5 of that group that owes about 90% of the money.
Right.
Now, some of them only owe less than $100, but there's a number of them that owe more than
$750. Which means you probably will get that $100 sometime soon.
And we expect
they probably go on and off the delinquent accounts, right?
But the real problem is funds management. I've got, if you'd like, I've got enough copies to pass out a copy of our expenditures from 2001 through this year on all of our homeowners association expenses, which includes, as a single item, irrigation-related expenses. And they vary considerably. They vary from $7,700 one year to $2,900 another year, and then they go back up to $92. And when you're trying to do this on a homeowner's budget fee and at the same time keep your the funds that the homeowner association keeps in its treasury low so that we don't have tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars like a few of them do. We run it on a very low budget. Everybody's happy that way. Nobody goes to Brazil and we don't have any concern that they would. But that causes problems so that, for instance, in that period of years, that 7 years, we've gone in the hole 4 years so far. We have a negative balance. And if you add it all up, it's all negative. We've been drawing from past monies that simply aren't there at this point. And we borrow from Peter to pay Paul, essentially, and it's not a good way to do business. We have in the past even experienced where we borrowed basically from the contractor we hired to do the work by not paying him until we had enough money to pay him, which is not good business either.
Right.
Makes people not want to work for you. So this process, when we have a large expenditure, and during the just prior, as a matter of fact, the day before the last committee meeting, the transportation committee meeting, where we had a discussion on this issue, we had a major break in the system, and we'd received a letter from SRP telling us, all the members of the organization, they were going to not deliver water if we didn't get the thing fixed. Well, that got our attention, certainly, and we did manage to get it fixed, but there was a question of whether there was funds available. If we do this as a taxing district, then basically we can use the county as our bank. We can spend the money needed to fix the pipe when it needs to be fixed, and then at the end of the year, however they do that over a period of 3 years, they average it out, I think, and that's what the tax is based upon. Well, we think we know what it'll be. Based on current expenditures, it'll be about $100 a year. It might vary a little bit, but the county will take care of that fluctuation for us. And that's our real problem, is the fluctuation, because you just don't know what it's going to be. It's like taking a little bitty piece of your street maintenance group and try to budget for 10 people, and you can't, because their expenditures vary so widely. You have to have a large group in order to get some level of average for their expenditures. We don't have that. We're a small group.
How many homeowners?
There's 74 lots.
74 lots.
And Vice Mayor, if I might interject here, I think that Councilmember Rawls has really gotten to the heart of the issue here. An HOA is, at some level, a voluntary means of taxation. Everyone who owns a home enters into that association willingly, at some level, delinquencies aside. What's offered here is a somewhat involuntary form of taxation on other neighbors. Now, there are benefits to that and there are costs to that. And from the city perspective, the potential benefit is taking care of flooding in the streets and some other problematic things. The cost to that is granting a district the power of eminent domain that we don't know the consequences of down the road. And that, I think that's really the decision to be weighed.
I think there's, you know, I don't think there's any danger as long as Scott's the chairman of the committee that we're going to have any eminent domain coming out of that group. But, you know, we don't live forever, Scott. So it's
that's right.
And Catherine raises the other issue that concerns me, which is that when someone buys property in an organization or a place that has an HOA, it's a voluntary decision that you make. I'm going to live here, but contractually I'm going to abide by these rules. The formation of a taxing district is after the fact. You're already there. 51% of your neighbors impose a tax on 49% or 60-40 or 75-25. It doesn't matter what the number is. There's the ability, but it's also the same ability that the homeowners association has, but that was one that they knew when they went into it was potentially there. And my concern, again, is both the involuntary nature of these districts and the fact that instead of trying to pursue your civil remedies through your HOA opportunities, you're now going to use the coercive power of government to potentially take the, because they're not, if they don't pay their taxes, then they're going to lose their property pursuant to a tax sale. And I don't really think that's what we want to have happen because of irrigation water. So I understand the practical problems, but I prefer to see it handled through where there is an HOA. So if I could, my recommendation on the policy decision is to change the word on number two, which says now says approve formation request on a case-by-case basis. That implies that the decision has already been made. I would say consider formation on a case-by-case basis. Because when your policy is we're going to approve them on a case-by-case basis, you've already,
that's a good point.
It's a foregone conclusion that you're going to approve it. And then when we get to the request from Scott and his group, That's a real hard one.
Tom?
Yeah.
Rather than our giving a final decision on his request this morning, we are missing two council members, the mayor and council
I don't think you want to get a final decision because I don't think you can get to four today.
Can we get to four to forward this to the Monday night council meeting for a decision?
Do you need?
We need direction to staff to put it on the agenda for Monday night.
Can't the mayor put anything on the agenda he wants?
He can. He's not here.
Can't Ms. Dollar do that?
The city manager is also out of town. Can we get?
She's the acting city manager. Can it just get on the agenda without
approval?
One of us having to.
I guess it can. I don't know what the. I'm not sure what the benefit is in one way versus the other.
I'm not sure there was one either. It just feels more comfortable.
Oh, I guess it does. Yeah.
On the agenda. That's fine. Yeah, it doesn't matter how it gets on there. Let's get it on there and have the discussion some more. But give me a call over the weekend, Scott, if you want, because we'll talk about it. But I just got to tell you, it's rubbing me the wrong way.
Well, it took a lot of thought on my part.
I can't imagine.
Councilmember Jones.
As in the committee meeting when this was brought forward, I was the dissenting vote on this when it was approved to come towards whole council, and I will express the same feelings I had then. I have grown up with irrigation almost my entire life, and we've had to deal with some deadbeats and people who steal water, and it's the system goes bad, and they say it's going to get cut off, and you have to hurry and get it fixed, and then you go and try and collect the money. I've been through all that my whole life. I understand how frustrating it is and how unfair it is when some people are just plain deadbeats. I also understand that sometimes you have people who steal water and our police officers have not been fully educated in water rights and understanding how easy it is to check a water board and see if they're entitled to have the water then or not. And we need to do a better job of educating our police officers so that when people are stealing water, they are stealing and they can be cited appropriately. My biggest issue is, as Tom has indicated, the legal aspects of granting governmental authorities to a small group, and it is scary to me. Your group may not have any problem. I understand that fully, but again, you won't be there forever, and I'm worried about setting a precedent for other neighborhoods where they won't, in my opinion, handle it correctly. A little bit of power causes problems, and some people don't handle authority well. You have your HOA, which is capable of assessing the fees. You can hire somebody to do the work you need to do. I understand size and the stability of up and downs of things, and that's, again, as an HOA, you're going to have other things that you need to plan for and put money away for. Your biggest challenge is collecting from people. And by doing a taxing authority, having the county do the taxing for you, having them be the bill collector for those fees, simplifies your process, but it comes attached with those other issues that I'm concerned about, eminent domain and other issues. So while it sounds good, sounds nice, it will make it a lot simpler for your HOA, you still have the ability to take them to a small claims court. You can prohibit them from taking water with a court order, whatever it takes. There are other avenues, and so I'm very leery about moving forward on this type of a deal, simply because of the possible abuses in the future, which again, right now, probably wouldn't be a problem, but maybe 15 years down the road, it very well could be, and I don't want to open the floodgates for that.
Kyle, if you'd look at page 6, in terms of giving policy direction to staff, and rather than saying approve, let's just substitute the thought of consider for each one of those. I think, Tom, that was a good suggestion. Where would you fall on this chart?
Same position I was before, that I don't want to take any action because I don't want to allow any more formations.
So you're on bullet point 5?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Rex, did you have something else to say before I go on to Scott?
No, good, Scott.
Okay, Scott?
You know, there's a cost and benefit to everything, and I think it was telling Not too long ago, we had a citizen contact the entire council. I think, fortunately for me, it was in Rex's district this time, that the water from irrigation was coming out to the street and causing damage. And so what you had here was a system outside the city's operation, outside of our expense, directly impacting our citizens' tax dollars because it was causing damage to city property. Why? Because there was nobody to manage the system that they were utilizing. So the system was degrading over a period of time, and what you end up with is not damage just to their property, but you have the externality of being damaged to city property, and we all have to pay for that. Well, I share many of the concerns, and we've had this discussion, Scott, and I think I was the one that brought up the issue on eminent domain. If I recall correctly, it may not have been me, but that was a bit of a concern. So I guess I have some questions here. I think I already know the answers to them, but we'll try this anyway. These IWDDs have been operating within city boundaries for quite some time. And during your due diligence in writing this wonderful tome, did you find any case studies in the Corporation Commission where the IWDD was being sued or vice versa by the city?
No, nothing to that effect. I would say one of the things that Bill actually discovered, and he can elaborate, is that an interesting thing that we did see is that over time, some of these districts want to, they want to dissolve. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. They want to dissolve, and someone at the county related a case to Bill where literally had people walking in with a box of paper saying, I don't want this anymore. Would you please take this back? And I noticed in doing some research that I think it was just last year, there was some legislation put forth by the state that made it simpler to dissolve these districts, and I don't know if that passed. So I know that just like an HOA or any other organization, problems are encountered, and it probably depends very much on who runs it. We have not seen any cases between cities and districts that I know of, and Bill can elaborate on that.
I wasn't able to locate any reported cases. Cases could have occurred, but you can't always find them. If there was no appeal, then you wouldn't really have any way to track it down. But if it makes any difference, the statutes that allow for the formation of the IWDDs do specifically state that they can sue and be sued. Mm-hmm. So they can.
There's no case out there striking anybody's mind that anybody can remember where the city was sued by an IWDD.
Not to my knowledge.
Not that we know of.
So, but the risk is there. I'm acknowledging that. The fact is that nobody can point to a particular case and see how ugly that one got right. With the city.
That's right.
And these have been in for decades. These have been existing, and in fact, have been existing in Mesa and taking care of this water system in Mesa for how long now? 11 years. And we didn't even know they were there, which somebody needs to answer for, by the way. So they've been operating well in Mesa. They've been maintaining a system that, without maintenance, potentially could cause harm to the city. And there, Tom, there are legitimate concerns about this.
I'm sorry, Councilmember Summers, if I could just intercede there. Actually, I feel that I need to mention that there are also problems with the Tanner Groves Irrigation Water Delivery District, and I know that because one of their board members contacted me. They have similar problems to what Councilmember Griswold and Scott Granger are describing, difficulty, even though they have this government entity, difficulty maintaining the system, and we do get reports of flooding from Tanner Groves as well.
Out of curiosity, that was another question I had, because they talked about having some problems with collecting or putting liens or collecting liens. How does that change with the water district? Can there be a tax sale from that, or is it the same, you put a lien on the house when they sell?
Councilmember Summers, it's subject to the county rules for tax collection. So if you don't pay the taxes for long enough, and we know that because Mesa itself was threatened by the county that they were going to sell our property for not paying these assessments. So it works just
that's
like a property.
Yeah.
I think the Councilman Summers, the property tax system, from what I recall, is a little more complicated than that, too, because what they actually do is they sell the right to collect, and then the person that purchases that right tries to collect, and if they can't, then they can bring an action to try to take the property. So it's kind of convoluted. But the upshot is that it would allow an additional or alternative enforcement mechanism.
Well, the law was written by politicians and attorneys, so of course it's convoluted.
That's right.
If I may add one item here, the tax that we're talking about is 0.0003%. Long before our little irrigation district decided to take someone's house under eminent domain, there's going to be a lot of other people in line, long before we are, because our tax is so tiny. We're $100 a year is just about what that amounts to. That's what we would start with, because that's what we've been using the last few years.
The last piece I wanted to address was the involuntary nature. And I think what I'm going to recommend, and stealing a little bit from Tom, is that we consider an IWDD request, formation request on a case-by-case basis. This is where we may be able to, and Rex had mentioned this before, if this is a 51-49 split, I don't know that this council really would want to approve an IWDD in that case. The question is, can we do that? Can we do it after?
Councilmember, you won't know. The petitions are not circulated until we give approval, right. So you really wouldn't know ahead of time, other than the word of the citizens, which may be, you know, valid, very valid, obviously, in this case. But you wouldn't know ahead of time.
Is there a process that we can put in place so that we could have them collect signatures and look at how many people are requesting this? So, I mean, if there is some kind of, if we could do that and we could say, all right, there's at least 90% of the signatures are here, then we have a pretty good measure. And I think that's where it leads to the case-by-case basis. And we can tell, is there popular support for this? Is this narrowly going to pass? This particular case sounds like there's overwhelming support for this, and the fact that there is anybody in here opposed? No? All right. Well, you know, and this is by no means a random sample, but it sounds to me like there's overwhelming support on this one, and I think if we can put into this a process on a case-by-case basis where the council could get a feel at least for how the neighborhood feels and that there's overwhelming support, then that's how I would prefer to proceed with future cases.
Chuck, Robert, and Scott, looks like we know what you're going to be doing this weekend. Councilmember Rawls, then Councilmember Jones.
I thought there was something in this report that said that conditional approvals were not acceptable to the county by the city.
Councilmember Rawls, I think I don't think we put that in the report. When we had met previously, I recall, I think you may have asked that question. And what I understood from my conversations with a member of the county attorney's office was that they had taken the policy position and that they would not accept a conditional approval as meeting the statutory muster.
Right. And you're right, it's in the minutes of the Transportation Committee meeting, not the report. But I mean, I think we could probably get a sense of the community,
right.
But we couldn't give approval subject to withdrawing that approval if it turned out to be 51-49 later.
That's very true. Okay. I think we all know we can get a sense up here when there's a strong community opposition to something
Well, no, you're right.
Experienced that
you're right.
Before.
And that's
Hurricane Bay.
If I could, there's one other troubling aspect I haven't raised yet. And on the bottom of page 2 of the council report, it talks about immediately after organization, each landowner must show the existence of facilities in good condition. If such infrastructure does not exist, the landowner must construct it. Meaning that this board. And one of the problems here is we have a good group here. Apparently, the organization that we're a member of doesn't even follow the statutory requirement of having 3 board members. It only has 1. So, again, that's the potential for abuse that exists. But this doesn't look like an assessment. It looks like the organization goes to the landowner and says, you shall do this, and you shall pay for it. And if you don't, then we'll do it. And then we'll assess you the whole amount. That doesn't sound like across-the-board taxation to me.
Councilmember Rawls, yeah, that is technically what the law says, and that's why I included it in the report. I don't know, I've never heard, I would of course have no reason here, but I've never heard of any case where an IWDD has enforced that against its own landowner. So presumably that wouldn't happen, but you're theoretically correct in that. That could be a potential.
The power exists.
Yes.
So the power exists as a taxing district that's to force somebody to make the improvements, pay for themselves, or have the taxing district do it and then charge that person for the whole amount. And I'm assuming they're going to charge it as part of the tax bill.
I don't know the council member, I don't know the means, but in theory they could.
That's a lot more powerful than the homeowners association has, and that scares me even more. So maybe by Monday night we can get a little better feel for, perhaps one of you guys can send me the statutes on this and let me read it myself. And
that's not the way we understood.
Yeah, but we've already given the fact that this report is excellent, so we can't start nitpicking.
Okay.
So everything in here is true 100%. So we have to accept that. Maybe you could slip me a copy of that section, and Scott, maybe you could read it too. But it's right at the bottom of page 2 of the council report, the top of the next page. And
I had given Council Member Summers permission to do a little dialogue there back and forth with you. He apparently wants to do a little bit more.
Actually, I was going to give some homework to Scott. I think listening to what's been said here, what needs to come out for Monday, Scott and Chuck? Chuck, okay, I remember. You have an HOA, and the question is, why can't the HOA do it? And I think you probably ought to hire our attorneys to write it for you in a clear and concise manner, why it is that the HOA can't deal with the issue at hand, and why the IWDD is a much better alternative. What are the structures and processes in the IWDD that are not afforded to the HOA that makes this the best alternative? So why the IWDD, not the HOA, and give a series of bullet points and short, concise explanations, and that might be very helpful too.
Councilmember Jones. Sorry. If he wants to yield the floor to you.
No, I just wanted to tell you, Scott, that Scott doesn't take direction from government officials all that well. So. you might want to suggest to him or recommend to him. Or
I highly recommend. It wasn't an order. He wants my vote. It's a trick.
Sorry, Kyle.
No, I really wanted the back and forth.
Yeah, he wanted the back and forth. Well, I'm going to do a little bit of that, Scott, because when we go forward with the discussion, and I will be out of town Monday, so I'll be on the phone, but when I hear you guys talk about, the flooding in the streets, all that, this does not correct that. No level of supervision or government is going to get somebody out of bed to go turn their head gate. That just isn't going to happen. This, if you peel away all the stuff of people who do not take their water, who take it when they shouldn't, this really, the crux is payment and who's going to collect it and to balance out your payments to maintain the system. That's really the crux of this whole thing. And my concern is the side things that are tied to that. Because we hear stories all the time. We get people up at the pulpit talking to the council, giving us all this, their sob stories, when it doesn't directly get to the crux of what the issue is. And the crux here is having the ability to collect the money from people who are deadbeats. That's the crux of the whole thing. And I just have difficulty trading off the other things that are tied to it to simplify that for you, because this has nothing to do with just flooding the streets and stuff. It has with repairing, but you can still get it repaired and collect the money.
But the street flooding is a result of neglect and apathy, and that apathy grows over the fact that there's few people that are maintaining the system, and over time those people just throw their hands up in utter frustration and say, I give up. I'm not going to keep putting in my money for somebody who doesn't want to pay and maintain the system, just wants to use it. And over time, that neglect is a direct result of the problems that we're going to have.
But
it won't eliminate it.
All that ability right now.
It, Perhaps it does, perhaps it doesn't, and I guess that goes to Scott
to
and Chuck.
Assignment?
To do their assignment. All right, you know what? That's the professor in me coming out. The part-time professor in me coming out. But
only at private schools, however.
I went to private school, as a matter of fact. 12 years. So, but in putting this in place helps prevent that. Could it happen anyway? Yes. Could we have a poorly run IWDD? Absolutely, we could. I don't think with Scott and Chuck and some of these other folks involved, we're not going to have that. In 15 years, you could turn it over. But on the other hand, too, we've also seen them come forward and say, you know, no, enough is enough. We don't want this thing anymore. And the county's changed that rule. So, no, it doesn't completely 100% eliminate the problem, but it is another tool to pay for it, to ensure that they have the money, and to help maintain that system and stave off potential problems. I can't guarantee anything.
Okay, well, thank you. I have enjoyed this debate. As a Council Member Rawls has noted to me, I am a debater from my younger years, and so I enjoy that. Having been the moderator now, I'm going to take a moment of being the person who is actually expressing an opinion on this. We have three people, Tom, Rex, and Scott, who have gone with item number two, which is to consider an IWDD formation request on a case-by-case basis. That is also my preference. Okay. So I think that you have four people giving direction in that regard. I'd like to comment on this one for a minute, but we're going to forward it to Monday night for discussion. My initial response was very similar to Kyle's. As I got more information and read the report, oddly enough, I actually changed where I was. First of all, it seems to me that we have a group here that has actually researched the law and is attempting to follow the law. All of these other groups that exist were formed outside of the process that's supposed to be in place. So the groups that exist right now in the city exist without having gone through this process. They have these powers, but let's talk for a moment about the power of eminent domain, which is not the same as what is, I want to make sure that this is clear. That is not what happens when you don't pay your taxes. That is not an eminent domain action. That's an action that, you know, a tax sale, the county assessor, and as was noted very well by Mr. Granger, that occurs, you know, that would occur long before it happened with this because they didn't pay their school taxes, you know, or others that are much larger than this assessment. The power of eminent domain is probably, in a lot of ways, the most frightening power of government because it's the power to take your property away from you. You have to be compensated for it and justly compensated for it, but it's still a frightening power. My understanding from reading the report is that power extends to their authority having to do with the irrigation district. They can't suddenly, you know, condemn the house of the person next door to them because they want to put in a Hyatt hotel. Because that would not be in regard to their authority as an irrigation district. Is that true?
Vice Mayor Walters, that is an accurate summation of the law of eminent domain. If you want to take something, it has to have some relation to the purposes for which you exist.
And then let's take a look at, and certainly Mesa knows a little bit about eminent domain. We never appealed the Bailey case. We could have appealed it, we didn't appeal it. The criteria in there are now the standing law in Arizona in terms of what happens with eminent domain. And there's a lot of protection in the Constitution, there's protection from the Bailey case that actually addresses the issues of eminent domain. So I think to hang it out there as the boogeyman as if there were no controls in place would be not really looking at the entire issue. The thing I think that really swayed me the most is, as I talked to Mr. Granger yesterday, is the notion that somehow the people, everyone bought in this area knowing it was an irrigation area. They knew that. And they bought a home there, and then some are choosing to let their neighbors finance the cost of that irrigation system for them. It's based on their goodwill to a certain extent. You know, I go to you and you say you'll pay and you're out there, okay, I'll pay. Well, you know what? I don't want to pay. And that person still has the benefit accrued to them, even though they didn't pay and they knowingly purchased in an area where they were going to have all of those things.
I don't know what they thought, that irrigation systems automatically took care of themselves, that they never broke, whatever that was. But to me, that puts an unfair burden on everyone else in that system. And for that reason, and the other things that are in place, I am actually in support of this, which is not where I thought I was going to be initially. So your report that you wrote so beautifully actually had, and having a conversation with Mr. Granger actually took me to a different place. So we'll have some more, it's possible, who knows, on Monday, maybe somebody will say something that'll swing me back the other direction, but as for right now, that's where I am. I think you have now four people to give direction in terms of future IWDDs. I think the county now knows what the process is that they're going to have to go through with future IWDDs, thanks to this neighborhood. Unless we have, okay, great, the debate goes on. Councilmember Rawls.
Just two comments, one's a mea culpa. I was on the Board of Supervisors in 95 and 96 when we did these, so apparently I'm to blame.
Well,
at least for the
great staff report.
And I was actually chairman in 95, so if there was one form then, I'm really to blame. Claudia, if anything, your argument just made me more likely to vote no on Monday night, simply because the idea that government has to step in and correct every civil inequity that exists between people strikes me at a much even deeper level than I look forward to Monday night as well, but I just have to tell you that was probably, from my standpoint, the worst thing you could have said.
I'm good at that, Tom,
yeah.
Aren't I?
No, we're good for each other, Claudia,
yes.
No question.
Councilmember Griswold.
I was going to respond to part of what Councilman Rawl said. In this case, I don't think it's government imposing itself on us. We actually want to create a little piece of government of our own so that we can police ourselves. It's not as though the city of Mesa was coming down there and just going to decide it's going to run our irrigation district for us. We want to run it, and this is how we'd like to do it. And besides the collection issue, our real issue, I think the primary issue we have is not collection so much, although it's a problem and it's a major one, is payments. We feel taking responsibility as a business owner, in effect, we need to make our collections, we also need to be able to make our payments, and this process will allow us to do that without borrowing money from people that we don't intend to borrow it from. Thank you.
Tell you what, Scott, on Monday night, I won't talk. You can talk, libertarian to libertarian. And
okay.
Councilmember Griswold.
You know, I like that, government for the people and by the people. Somehow it sounds familiar. It's probably good government. When people govern themselves, take care of their own issues, and fix problems. That's what government's for. When you can't fix it in your own little lot, the guy next to you that's flooding your lot, you have no control over it. So voluntarily submitting yourself to government is much better than government imposing itself on them. So that's why I'm really concerned about the number of people involved, et cetera. So hopefully Monday a couple things will come out. One, we'll have a consider these cases. We'll have signatures first that we will look at to see what the numbers are of for and against. And we'll have a clear process to dissolve one of these if somebody wants to get out of it and they all agree, we don't want to do this anymore, go. And we'll also discuss the area of police enforcement of stealing water. Water is more and more valuable. If I come in your backyard and take your bicycle or your car, the police will enforce. If I steal water, the police sort of stand back and go, it's not really our issue. I think we need to change that and start looking, because it's a valuable commodity being stolen right now on a regular basis by certain individuals with impunity. So hopefully that'll come through. Just a question, one more clarification point. Do you have the power with this money to hire a professional water handler that goes out there and controls the floodgates if everybody agrees to it?
Yes, I believe we would.
Okay. Thank you.
I noted that I had written a question to myself that I failed to ask. What are the laws that govern the board in terms of when elections take place, what terms of office are, things like that. Who sets up those rules? And I asked Scott that question last night, so he may have come prepared to answer the question. I don't know.
Well, I did some research on that, just as I said I would. And my research varies a little bit from what was in the report. Sorry.
No, that's
different. What I found was...
Taking hits there.
That the original... it takes three people to actually create one of these officially, as far as the county goes. Three people to have their names on the impact statement. Those three individuals are the names, their names will be on the petition. And by signing the petition in support of the irrigation water delivery district, the people involved, the property owners, are voting for those three people, those three individuals, to be their board. Mm-hmm. Right. So those three individuals become the original board. And the way I read it, from what I got out of Title 28, 261, is they are the board, and there is no requirement for elections, and they replace one another, by appointment, that there may not be any further votes.
Okay. Now you just made me scared, Scott.
Well, I'm a little concerned about that myself, and yeah. I think that can be addressed in how we organize a district, but that's not what the report says.
Vice Mayor Walters, if you look at 483444, there is a statute that basically says there'll be a biennial, every 2 years there'll be an election for the trustees. So at least preliminarily, I think that there's supposed to be a vote every 2 years. Incidentally, also, the trustees are supposed to be bonded. I mean, there's a number of, I mean, there's some indication that some of these entities that presently exist treat this in an informal manner. But the statutes require this to be a legitimately run government entity. And there are a number of requirements that are imposed on the participants and the entity once it's formed. Now, there really isn't much in the way of anyone enforcing these requirements, but they do exist.
And council members, Vice Mayor, to that note, I do have some copies of the annual reports of the three districts that exist within our boundaries. So if you want to take a look at those, you can. There, even for... Tanner Groves, which appears to be, I will say, the best run of the three, or maybe that's not fair, the one that most closely resembles the statutes, the reports are sparse. And so I think that is an issue. You know, the county is, in theory, supposed to be overseeing these districts, but I really don't know. Maybe Councilmember Rawls knows, but there doesn't appear to be much oversight.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
Very little oversight, and we've not heard any screaming from the masses.
Right. That's
over,
a good point.
Oh my goodness, what they're doing to me.
Right.
I wanted to address Tom because he was so interested in going back and forth, and I caught on something that he said that I actually very much agree with. It is not the role of government to deal with every little social ill that comes our way. I think that's an absolutely horrible way of running government. But there's a difference between social ill and a public good. So the question is the water that you have a public good? Very few, I hope nobody would argue that the fire department is a public good. And there's a reason that the County Islands and Gilbert no longer have a fire department of their own. It's for the same reason that you're having problems running your water system, is that there were a number of free riders who decided that we'll let your neighbor pay for maintaining a system and I'll only worry about it if I have a fire. Well, the trouble is you can't maintain the fire department unless you pay into it. And the same issue is coming up with this. It's a public good. You can't exclude people from it. If there's a fire, you have to fight the fire. Otherwise, it spreads. If you have the water, they get to use it. Tom's going to come back. I know he is. So, I mean, we have a system right now that's not well maintained. We're seeing problems in some other areas of the city. With that, and I think at least it's worth the discussion, however way that vote goes. And I want to give it back to the mayor because I think she wants to give it over to Tom.
I am going to give it to Tom. I'm going to let you have the final word on this quickly. But what I'd like to just clarify is this is going to the council Monday night. There will be time for additional discussion. We probably won't have a fun debate on Monday night. I'm really sorry about that. Just because we won't take the time to do that. Not.
I was just going to say, Scott, there's a world of difference between a public good involving a fire department and if there is a public good in the delivery of private property, because that's what that water is. It's private irrigation water. And so I think there's a big difference there. I have a harder time finding the public good. That's all I would say.
Well, and that was the intent of what I was saying, is that you have to make that determination.
Then it becomes a much more fine-tuned balancing act, and who knows. So, okay. A lot of fun. Scott, thanks for sitting here through it.
Thanks
for the imperfect, apparently, report. So.
Thank you so much. Thank you to all of you for taking the time to be here today. I told Scott he could feel free to call on you as his lifelines if he needed help, but it sounds like you tutored him well before he got up here. We'll move on to item number 4, which is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. We have 2, Parks and Recreation, Planning and Zoning. Second. I have a motion. I have a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Moving on to item 5, which is to hear a report on meetings and or conferences attended. Who wants to start on this one? Councilmember Griswold.
I'd like to give you a plaque by the employer support for the Guard and Reserve. Went to a dinner where we were awarded this plaque as being one of the best employers in the entire state for treating the National Guard and the guardsmen and reserves that work for us. Over 35 have been employed in operation, different operations around the world. And so I would like to present this to you.
Thank you. And on behalf of the mayor, since it says to Keno Hawker, he apparently is the good employer here. We'll turn it over to Debbie Dollar so that it can get up along with our other awards. So I'm going to pass that on down there. Councilmember Griswold, did you have any others that you wanted to report on?
Okay. Not this time.
Councilmember Summers.
District 6 Pancake Breakfast at 205 was on Saturday. Absolutely incredible turnout. Answered a lot of questions. I saw staff got very tired over that 2.5-hour period. It's amazing how many folks showed up and asked questions and got information and have been followed up. So we'll continue to do these a couple times a year, I know, in my district. And since I have such a large one, we'll be moving that to the east side of town for the next one. So,
you mean you have another fire station in your district?
Yes, but I can fit 3 of your districts into mine.
I only have 2 fire stations in my district. The pancakes were great, by the way, Scott. Rex and I enjoy the pancakes. Councilmember Jones.
Just want to make mention, next Wednesday on the 9th, Lowell Elementary School will be celebrating 50 years. They're having a celebration there at the school. So back in those days, 50 years ago, there weren't very many elementary schools. So those who attended Lowell Elementary may want to be interested that they're having that celebration. And that's
what starting. Time is that going to be?
For
all Lowell Elementary School alums, I think that includes former Vice Mayor Pat Gilbert, I think, went to Lowell Elementary School.
Well, they're going to, at 8 o'clock, have something out at the bleachers. Channel 10 helicopter is going to go out there.
Is that 8 a.m.?
8 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Other reports. I have just a couple that I want to mention. One is that we had the service recognition award events day before yesterday for our employees who have been with the city for 5, 10, 15, 25, 30, and 135-year employee. We have a lot of really fine people in the city who have given their hearts and souls, and we want to thank everyone again. Even if it wasn't a 5-year mark for you, that doesn't mean we don't appreciate your service. Thank you to the fine employees that we have in the city of Mesa. Then another item, because we haven't reported for a while, it's probably been about a week and a half ago that we had a meeting with our bond rating agency, and the mayor and I were in that meeting. Brian Raines, the city manager, Chuck, other folks were all there. Larry Given was there in the meeting with us. We gave them all of the information about the city in terms of their revenues. They were impressed with Chuck as well, that he was hitting his targets so closely. One thing came out of that, which was a recommendation
that we come up with some guidelines. Actually, we're doing things that they are very impressed with. They kept asking about whether or not the council was involved with the budget. Did the council know about the budget? How often did the council hear about the budget? And, you know, that gave us a really good chuckle, because, and when they found out how much, I think they were sort of shocked. They're used to maybe a council hearing once about the budget, and they were surprised by how involved we have all been with this. Some of the things that we are doing, they were very impressed with, but then they asked, did we have a policy that mandated our doing that? Our reserves, things like that. And so what we'd like to do is have that go to the Audit and Finance Committee. Brian is taking that charge, and that will be coming back to those of us who are on the Audit and Finance Committee to actually look at some policies on some of these things that we are currently doing. I think that there might have been one or two other things that are now on their list that they're going to ask us every single year. Are you doing this? Are you doing this? And we'll bring that back to the Audit and Finance Committee. Anything else? All right. Do we have any, we don't have any pre-scheduled. Do we have any items from citizens present? I beg your pardon. I was just hoping not to have any more meetings. Scheduling of meetings or general information. Ms. Dollar.
Vice Mayor, members of the council, on Monday, May 7th, there'll be a Community and Neighborhood Services Committee meeting at 3:30, followed by the study session and then City Council meeting. On both Thursday, May 10th and Thursday, May 17th, study sessions at 7:30. Monday, May 21st, study session and a council meeting. I also wanted to mention that we're having our first City Hall at the Mall event. That'll be on Saturday, May 12th at Fiesta Mall from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's an opportunity to showcase our city services and have staff available to answer resident questions. It'll take place in the center court area and then also the parking lot near mall entrance number 2.
I don't know if there's any food there. Councilmember Rawls.
Just wanted to also make people start to get ready for the May 17th United Way luncheon, the wrap-up luncheon. I found out yesterday I was getting fitted for my costume that I not only have to dress up like the Scarecrow, I have to sing If I Had a Brain. So if you have already purchased tickets, you might want to try to get a refund so you don't have to go. But actually, I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I would encourage anybody who has a chance to come watch Scott, Kino, and I make complete fools of ourselves.
Tom, I will be at my niece's wedding, but I have had a commitment from someone to video that for me, because I think definitely there are blackmail possibilities here. I need to go back and just make one comment on the bond rating meeting. I know that in some communities, people travel to New York or San Francisco or someplace else for that. We held that meeting in the mayor's office on a conference call. We put the speakerphone in the middle of the table and we all talked. So I just wanted you to know that that was how it took place here in Mesa. Councilmember Griswold.
I'll be out of the country for that day, but I will request copies of the DVD and videos and buy them. So thank you.
We'll send Jayabi.
On YouTube,
yeah. We'll send Jayabi providing, and you'll be lip syncing. Is that?
How it's supposed to sound. Yeah. So.
But it was for you. It was a brain, not a heart.
No, Kino's the heart. I'm the brain. I know. Kino's, I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I thought it was miscasting as well.
Casting against type.
Right. You know.
Councilmember Jones.
On the 19th of May, I'll be having a pancake breakfast at Station 1. So, and I think that's when we're scheduled for. Where's my assistant? Anyway.
Excellent.
Yeah, 19th of May, Saturday morning at Station 1.
We'll expect another announcement at our next meeting about that one. All right. Did we have any items from citizens present?
We had one request, but it was Mr. Granger, and we've already heard from him.
Okay. And he has left. So, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Yep.
Second.
All those in favor, please rise.
Aye.
Thank you.
Rise.